Chapter 3
What have you done?
Fasha, the fiery little compy woman, yelled as she burst into her cottage along with Anwar, and also Thess, who looked pretty silly holding a large basket full of black and white flowers.
Fashi, now it looks bad, but it's not as bad as it seems, Leader Zaire tried to explain.
But the irate woman wasn't having it.
It looks like you destroyed my roof!
Fasha hollered, and then she reached for the nearest hand tool and started coming after the alligator man.
Fashi!
Zaire yelped as he rapidly backed away from the mad gem cutter and her wickedly sharp awl.
Dearest, you wouldn't want to do anything you'd regret, right?
My regret is you!
She thundered.
And that's our cue,
Horace said, as he gathered an interesting-looking contraption up under one arm and then hauled ass through the back door. I didn't need to be told twice, and along with Anwar, Siskern, and Thass, the four of us zipped out after the Falcon Man as fast as we could.
Ooh, yikes,
I snickered, and the sound of banging and more arguing could be heard loud and clear, even though I closed the door behind me. Although the big hole probably negated any sort of soundproofing anyway.
What exactly happened?
The Ibex woman asked as she picked a few long splinters out of her auburn hair.
We were all in the garden when something blasted through the roof.
Ah, sorry about that,
Horace said and placed the strange mechanical device on a large tree stump near Fasha's workshed. It was clear the only purpose of the once-old tree was now just another work surface that had several half-finished prototypes in various stages of completion.
Explain this invention, Natavian,
Thass ordered, as we gathered around Horace so we could see the cylindrical thing. From this angle it looked a little like a rocket launcher, and as I examined the large-caliber barrel coupled with what was obviously a shoulder rest on the underside, I figured I had to be correct that it was a launcher of some sort.
Siskern and I call it the Rock Launcher,
Horace presented rather anticlimactically, even though he threw in some jazz hands.
Wait until you see what it does,
Siskern said, and the raptor man simply grinned like the cat who got the canary. Clever, I quipped. Does it launch rocks, by any chance?
Why, yes it does.
Horace bantered back without missing a beat, and he scooped up a softball-sized rock from the convenient pile at his feet.
Observe!
Then, like the ultimate ham he was, he unloaded the rock into the long iron-like tube, pulled this weird plunger thing back like a super soaker, and then yanked a cord under the barrel to release the mechanism like he was on QVC.
Twock! Whoa!
Horace shrieked when the force overbalanced him. And the projectile went high and wide.
Boom!
Tree limbs fell to the ground as the sizable rock crashed through the branches.
Oh, hell yes,
I said, and turned around to face Horace, who had fallen on his ass. So I held a hand out to help haul him back up.
This is the ranged weapon prototype you were talking about earlier?
Yes, indeed,
the Falcon Man said.
What do you think?
I think it needs improvements in stability, but overall it creates a lot of damage in its wake,
I said. Even if the lower Terrans can't actually ash the demons and prevent them from respawning, they can damage the fuckers enough to take them down until the RSE is over.
What is an RSE?
Thass interrupted with a tilt of his tattooed bald head.
Well, it used to be a red moon, right?
I reasoned, and the larger man nodded. But for some reason, it's not just the moon, but the sun, too. So the term red sky event makes more sense, RSE. Thass stared at me with the most stonewall expression I'd ever seen, and I honestly couldn't tell if he understood what I was saying.
Of course,
he finally said, as deadpan as anything.
Anyway, I cleared my throat, and Horace had to cover up a snort. I think there might be a way to make it more effective.
What are you thinking, Alex?
Regent Siskern asked, as he moved some more stuff out of the way, so Horace could set the launcher back down on the stump.
A better shoulder rest, for one, I said, as I scanned the scrap material scattered around for something that would replace the flat chunk of crumbling moss.
Here. I marched over to the detritus from the decimated tree branches,
and grabbed a few pieces of curved bark that had broken off. When I came back over to the work table, Horace was right on my heels with a curved whittling knife.
"This one!"
He picked the one I was already handing him, and then, like he was reading my mind, he quickly shaped it to fit more ergonomically against the curve of a shoulder.
"How do we attach it?" Thass asked.
"It should probably be detachable to an extent so the wearer can adjust it to their preference, but..." I ducked down and pulled out an odd object wrapped with some sort of pliant leather cord, and I unraveled it so I could lash the shoulder rest to the rocket launcher.
"Awesome,"
Horace said, and went to reset the device, but I stopped him. "Wait." I bent down and ripped up some familiar-looking vines growing at the base of the ancient stump/table. "Hand me two more rocks."
"You got it,"
Horace said, and he and Siskern each handed me equal-sized rocks. Then I wrapped the strange vine around one rock, and because of the way the thorns jutted out when pressure was applied, I was able to secure the rope to itself almost like extra-strength Velcro. "Knife," I instructed, and my trusty second slapped the small blade he was using earlier into my palm like a surgeon's assistant. I cut the rest of the vine with a quick slicing motion, so that when I wrapped the other end around the second rock, there would be about a meter of vine stretched between them. Then, when the task was done, I motioned for Horace to load the chained cannonballs into the barrel while I settled it on my shoulder.
"And once you have your target, let it fly by pulling on the wire here," he instructed, as he gestured to the rudimentary trigger. "Careful of the kickback."
"No kidding," I snorted, and then I walked around so I could lean over the stump and brace my elbows for more stability. The contour of the shoulder rest helped a lot when I lined up my shot, but even when I was expecting it, the recoil from the powerful device still jerked my shot up more than I wanted. I tried to compensate for the power by going low when I aimed at the copse of smaller trees bordering Fasha's small garden, but it ended up clipping more of the branches instead of slicing through the wiry trunks like I intended.
"Doc Hell,"
Horace deadpanned.
"I know."
I clicked my teeth in disappointment and tried to figure out how to adjust for next time.
"Just a few more degrees down and it would have been perfect."
"No, Alex, that was incredible,"
the Falcon Man repeated.
"It raised that whole area."
"This is something that will change the tides when it comes to fighting the Scourge."
Leader Zare's voice drifted out from behind us, and we all turned to greet the two elders. It seemed as if they had come to a truce at least, even if Fasha's sharp face was still pinched whenever she glared at the back of Zare's head.
"How long did it take to make this?"
Thass asked the small, compy woman.
"Only a day,"
Fasha said.
"If I had more help, I could up the output by 5 times, even with the modifications."
"We should get working on your design right away," Zare said. "I will spread the word, along with Thass, won't we?"
"Indeed, leader,"
Thass confirmed. "Hey, Zare," I asked, "consider the number you think you might want to make, and then double it."
"Why so, Ambassador?" the alligator man asked.
"It might be worth it if Lower Tear could present this design to the upper echelon as a sign both the village and mine folk are willing to work on including other Aventolian allies in matters of military and trade," I said. And if I'd rehearsed that particular speech a few times in my head, well, no one had to know.
"And why ever would us Loish ever agree to that charade?"
he asked, with an arched and scaly eyebrow. "I'm glad you asked, leader," I said formally. "This brings me to my next thing, to say sorry about how we blew a hole in your roof. Everyone is welcome to come back to my place for some food. There's actually a lot I'd also like to discuss with you and the regent, if you're willing."
"I admit I am intrigued," the leader said as he rubbed his chin. "We accept, but we will give you a moment to prepare for us. Thass, go with the ambassador with the basket of whatever we have left."
"Yes, sir,"
the big man said, and went over to the small garden so he could pick up a covered bushel of what I figured was produce of some kind. After everything was all squared away, Horace, Anwar, Thass, and I all made our way back up to our cottage, where it seemed as if the rest of the ladies were all refreshed from their rest and busy preparing a simple meal of fragrant stew and freshly baked bread.
"Husband, is that you?"
Shay sang out in her pretty nightingale voice. "It is, my wife," I called back as I sauntered into the kitchen. "And I brought Horace, Thass, and Anna. Zare, Fasha, and Siskern are coming a bit later. We're going to have to find a place for them to stay for the time being, if that's okay. By the way, this smells great."
"Oh,"
Shay murmured as I kissed her on the side of her temple while she sliced into a modest screecher breast. But when the rest of my words finally caught up with her, she paused and shot me a look.
"Wait, why? Not that they aren't welcome, of course, but it is a little abrupt."
"Well, we have your brother to thank for that one," I chuckled, and then tried to nab a piece of crispy roasted skin.
"What did you do, Horace Dola?"
The Phoenix woman growled as she pointed her large knife in his direction.
"It wasn't just me," the Falcon Man gasped. "Siskern was the one who wanted to test it inside Fash's shack."
"The prototype?"
Amaya chimed in as she helped her sister comb the remaining debris out of her autumn tresses.
"It's pretty amazing," I said with a grin.
"Could be a game changer, and a huge advantage for these people."
"That's wonderful,"
Shay said with her megawatt smile and resumed slicing up the screecher. I frowned.
"That's not crackers, is it?"
"No,"
she said as a laugh startled out of her.
"This was given to us after your trial with the snake tree. Where is the little pest, anyway? Did you manage to get your message to Siskern?"
"Ugh, I completely forgot," I said, and pulled Gris's letter out of my trouser pocket. "Shit. Oh, well, he'll be here along with Zare, and it might be good to talk to them both at once."
"Well, when you do, you can add the other response to it,"
Shay said.
"It's out in the lounge on the table. But where is the nuisance of a messenger?"
He got spooked right before the commotion at Fasha's," I grumbled, and went to grab the replies Shay had penned for me. "I'll have to go find him, I suppose."
"Take these,"
Thass said, and handed me something that looked like a bag of dried blue corn kernels.
"It might help lure out the stubborn beast."
"Thanks," I said, and headed back outside. After spending a few moments wandering around and shaking the bag of feed, I actually bumped into Siskern himself as he made his way from Fasha's.
"Alex, my friend,"
the raptor man said, as he observed me hollering the word crackers over and over.
"What are you in search of?"
"This stupid screecher," I grumped, and then shook the bag yet again. "Crackers, damn it!"
"And you are wanting this screecher in particular for?"
Siskern ventured with a perplexed look on his lizard-like face.
My son figured out how to turn them into messengers like Rufus," I explained, and pulled the letter from Gris out of my pocket again. "Here, after you read it, let me know what kind of reply you want to send, because we have to send them all together."
The Terran Regent took the letter from my grasp and silently read what his uncle wrote about his father, and about us returning to the upper echelon sooner rather than later. Siskern hummed as he finished reading, and I paused in my ongoing search for crackers. "Hey, man," I said. "I'm sorry about your father."
"Do not be,"
he sighed and hunkered down on a fallen log.
"Gris already prepared me after Senna was dispatched. He said my father's mind and body were already so ravaged long before I even left Tyr in the first place."
"Still," I added, "losing a parent is never easy. I mean, I can only assume. I never knew my parents either way, but I'm still sorry."
"Thank you."
He nodded his double-ridged head in acknowledgement.
"Your condolences are appreciated. To be honest, Uncle Gris has been more of a father to me over the seasons than my real father ever was."
"I wouldn't know, really," I shrugged, and then sprinkled some of the feed onto the ground. Maybe a new approach would coax out the stupid animal.
He hummed again. "Apparently I also must pick a wife post-haste."
"How do you feel about that?" I snickered, settling down.
"I admit I am disappointed my ambassador days seem to be at their end. But the more time I've had to think, the more I'm sure I'm ready to take over for Siskorn and be there for my people in a way he couldn't.
He took the bag of feed from me and poured a little in his palm.
Screech!
A telltale flapping sound could be heard before the nuisance glided down from whatever tree he was hiding in and landed gracefully on Siskern's forearm. Traitor, I griped, when Crackers began to nibble at the food in the raptor man's cupped hand.
He is a difficult thing, isn't he?
Siskern chuckled, and as I observed him sitting there patiently while the screecher ate its fill, it struck me how mellow the man seemed. There would always be that fierceness in his reptilian gaze, but a settled demeanor took up residence in his still posture that I wasn't sure had ever been there before. I think you're ready, I said simply, and Siskern tossed me a grateful look.
I will reply to my uncle, he said, as he patted Crackers on the back of his scrawny-looking back.
It was a wonder the thing could fly as far as it supposedly could. Take your time, I said, and pulled out the other response so I could hand them to him. When you're done, do you mind sending Crackers off? All you have to do is tell him the names of the people you want to deliver to. Can you make sure to include Rylan and Jenner?
I've got it covered, he assured.
And I thanked him and returned to the cottage to see if there was anything else I could do to prepare for our guests. Once the place was as spruced up as it could be, and when everyone was finally enjoying themselves around the table, Zaire finally pinned me with his steely stare.
Ambassador, he began,
and I took a swallow of ale so I could clear my throat.
What you proposed to me earlier about convincing the Loish to be on board with expanding Tear's boundaries. An ascension accord is one thing my people can agree on, but getting them to embrace outsiders is another. Why even bother?
To be frank, Leader Zaire, I've only been on your island for a short while, but even I can see how dire the situation is. Aside from the civil unrest that, yes, needs to be worked out first and foremost, the island itself is suffering under its own isolation. I wiped my mouth with a napkin and reached for some warm bread stacked on a large oval platter in the middle of the table. If you even get an ascension accord, you all would only be walking into a situation where agriculture alone is impossible due to the wild and out-of-control screechers.
We will domesticate them just like we have always done down here, Zaire argued. And our skills will make us valuable to the Uppish, who are the only ones my people should even think about currying favor with.
You haven't seen it like I have, Siskern chipped in. There are too many to be controlled without a massive culling.
Then we cull the beasts,
Zaire said, and took a vicious bite of the roasted screecher leg he was eating. You could get rid of them, I agreed. Or you can decide to trade the screechers and the squallers to other islands.
And what good will this do?
The alligator man questioned. According to research done by a reputable expert, Tear is apparently the only isle in Aventol that has creatures capable of traveling long enough distances, I explained, as I brought my idea to the table. Tear can be the isle to pioneer the first inter-island communication service that isn't reliant on cargo ships. It could change the pace of Aventol as a whole.
I am sensing there is a detail to this that I might be missing, the wise leader said, as he took a sip of ale from his tankard.
Well, I said, it would also be ideal if some of the Terrans could also volunteer to travel to other islands, in order to help train people in the ways of messengers and even passengers.
Passengers?
Fasha queried from across the table where Thass, Siskern, and the Mech sisters sat. That would be for the squallers, I clarified. Being able to fly between islands would revolutionize the way people get around as well.
What you propose is intriguing.
Zaire finally leaned back from the table with a satisfied sigh as he picked his teeth with a sharp splinter.
But even if I can get my people to agree with this idea of mingling with outsiders, I can guarantee the Uppish will have a harder time coming around. As you may also have discovered during your time here, they are the more prejudiced of the Terran races.
By my calculation, they won't have a choice but to go along with what the Loish end up doing, I volleyed back.
How do you figure?
He challenged. The reality is, the Uppish need you, I stated plainly. They already rely on you to grow their food, and you've seen how depleted their security forces are. Don't you see? The Loish hold all the cards. If Tear's only bread and butter is her steel, and the ore you need to make it is making you all sick, then it stands to reason you need alternatives that can replace the need to mine. The Screechers and the Squallers are your next commodity. The way I see it, not only are you solving the pest problem as well as your dependence on the poisoned ore, you double down with what you can offer both the Uppish and the rest of Aventol.
I see what you're saying, Zare said,
as he visibly worked through the logic for himself.
I have never thought of it this way. But you make a lot of sense, Ambassador Brightwood. The only thing, or rather person, that might give us an issue is Captain Tharfin of the Minefolk, wouldn't you say, Thas?
All eyes turned to the big man, who was in the middle of devouring his third bowl of stew. He said and lowered his spoon. However, the heralding of a loud trumpet rang out somewhere nearby and caused all of us to look around with alarmed expressions on our faces.
What good timing, Zare chuckled. It seems as if you won't have to wait very long to try and persuade the miners after all, Ambassador. They're here.